sixth edition. And we are going to have Wade B from New South Wales, Australia, read the story for us.
Hey guys, I'm Wade and I'm an addict. Another chance to live. In the life of every addict, there are crossroads, times when we could stop using and take responsibility for our lives, if we make the choice. I went through the crossroads one day in the bus station toilets and chose the wrong path. I think I was supposed to die, but by the grace of God, I was given another chance. I've been clean for 16 years. I got clean when I was 22, so I've lived most of my adult life as an NA member here in Australia. I have a full, rich life thanks to the program of Narcotics Anonymous. As an adolescent, I was governed by the compulsion to take drugs. The results were trouble, violence, prison, and poor health. My using was punctuated by legally required visits to counsellors, probation officers, psychologists, etc. Rarely could I hear what these people were saying or hear anything above the rumbling din of self and the desire for drugs. I was so focused on getting what I thought I needed that I ignored most of the moral boundaries most people take for granted. I stole, lied, cheated, scammed, robbed. In the end, I was exactly what the basic text says, reduced to the animal level. I hunted the streets like a wolf looking for money and drugs. Deep inside, I still had a conscience, but I couldn't access it. I couldn't afford to. It was buried under a pile of emotional rubble. The task of cleaning up all that rubbish was too great. There were too many things to deal with to live a normal life. My life became a misery of unresolved responsibilities. I believe every human's real job is looking after themselves, and I couldn't seem to do that. Eating, sleeping, drinking water, exercising, staying warm or clean seemed irrelevant and virtually impossible. The result was a vicious cycle of hunger, poor hygiene, and bad health. Between the layers of self, these inabilities hit a particular emotional pain that I carried. I couldn't feel it or articulate it properly until I got clean. I don't know whether I brought this pain from childhood or whether it came into the world with me, but I still carry it. It's not always present, but it arises from time to time as I move through these layers. If I get rejected, left out, treated as second best, or I'm not wanted in some way, the pain can become acute. I used to medicate this pain with drugs. For a long time, they made me feel better, but in the end, the drugs became their own particular pain. They drove me to the edge of sanity, to the brink of death, and now I no longer see myself as having that option. For me, using drugs is suicide. When I was 20 years old, I spent time in a maximum security prison for burglary. In there, I saw some of the most brutal human behaviors that I have ever witnessed. After two excruciating years, I was released with an absolute commitment to stop using. I lasted for 1 hour before I was stoned on about four different drugs and went into a blackout. My life spiraled out of control for the next few months. My powerlessness was evident, unmanageability undeniable. I woke up from a blackout with blood on me that wasn't mine. I had a pocket full of money and no recollection. I was frightened about what I was becoming. One night I was trying to sleep through withdrawals. I had taken some heavy tranquilizers, but they hadn't worked properly. I was in a stupor of frustration and futility. The pain of my whole wretched life was caving in on me. I worked myself into a weeping, cursing, violent rage, smashing the room, scratching and punching at my own face. My housemate was terrified and called my parole officer. The following day, an intervention was done by my parole officer, a counsellor, and my mother. They told me they were going to send me back to prison unless I went to NA and did 90 meetings in 90 days. I said I would do whatever they wanted. They told me that wasn't good enough. I had to make choices for myself because recovery couldn't occur until I really wanted to change. I was caught in a limbo of conflicting desires. Of course I wanted to change, but I couldn't. I wanted to use drugs, but I couldn't. I felt there was nothing left to do, so I decided to kill myself. I left the intervention that day filled with a sense of absolute doom and desolation. I did a robbery, bought as many drugs as I could, and overdosed in the bus station toilets. I wanted to die because there didn't seem to be an alternative to the misery that my life had become. I went through the crossroads that day and chose the wrong path, but by the grace of God, I was given a second chance. I woke up a couple of hours later, crumpled on the floor of the toilet, completely defeated, my life a shambles. I walked, trudged, not knowing what to do or where to go. In that state of blind desperation, the winds of chance blew me into a detox center across the highway. They took pity on me and admitted me, even though I wasn't the required 48 hours clean. I lay naked, curled up on the bed, sobbing that night, feeling a particular sense of freedom because deep inside, I think I knew it was over. I had surrendered. I just didn't really know what that meant yet. At that detox, they took people to meetings daily. I struggled through those painful first few days, but on a Wednesday night at a meeting in a homeless center, I heard and felt the NA message for the first time. I didn't have to use drugs anymore. There was a way out. I was inspired by the other people who were clearly junkies but didn't seem to be using. They made me believe there was a chance for me to really stop and have a go at life. I feel sad now writing this. I'm much more emotionally in touch with my old mad life now than I ever was back then. I couldn't imagine how life would play out. I just saw a black hole of the unknown, but I had decided just for the novelty to give it a go for a couple of days and see how long I could last. I lasted 49 days. Then I relapsed, and the compulsion to take drugs was back on me like a ferocious animal. My life spiraled immediately out of control again, and I realized that the previous 49 days had been the most trouble-free in the last 10 years. The relapse lasted for about 2 months before another detox and the death of another friend through overdose. I've been clean now since the 25th of January, 1989, and my life clean is my treasure. I protect it with my life because it is my life. I have gone on to do many of the things that it seems to me a person should do. I own a house and a business. I went back to school and got an education. All the normal social and material assets have returned. But more than any of that, I have loved at times deeply. I feel things. I feel everything. I guess I had always been scared of that, but it is amazing to feel brilliant and frightening, sad and awesome all at once. I am excited to be alive. I am excited about what is to come. I still suffer with existential angst from time to time and wonder what we are all doing here on this planet, but I have decided on a purpose and that makes it easier for me. I care about people getting clean. I have dedicated myself to NA and to serving others. I attend meetings regularly. I participate in the local area and the region. I sponsor people and I have an NA sponsor. I live the steps to the best of my ability and I'm trying to become the best person I can be. I believe that by living like this, we give others permission to do the same. NA gave me the key to another way of life and this is it. We keep what we have by giving it away.
Thank you so much. And now we will hear from our author, Tim B. from Australia.
Hi everyone, my name's Tim and I'm an addict. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. What a privilege to be in this meeting and to be part of these speaker jams. Every time I come to one of them, I get ripped apart emotionally. I heard very early on in NA that what comes from the heart touches the heart. And when I was younger, I didn't understand that, but I do now. And I think the reason that I didn't understand what that meant was because when I grew up, I grew up in a very addicted family. The disease was rife. My parents were both alcoholics. My step-parent was an alcoholic. My brothers and sisters were drug addicts. My big brother was a drug dealer. For me, it was just so completely normal to spend my life in a state of compulsive, habitual use of drugs. But the lack of safety at home and the violence at home, I was about 9 or 10 when I realised that the people at night were not the same people talking to us in the mornings. And I felt this deep sort of sense of injustice in my life. And I thought there's nothing I can do here. And I can remember deciding I'm not feeling any of this. I'm not playing a part of this anymore. And I just shut down emotionally like somebody, you know, pulling a roller door down on a garage or something. I was just a sad young kid who'd shut everything out. And I imagine that the effort of doing that was, hard. And when drugs came along at the age of 12 years old, it felt like such a relief. I remember the first time I ever got really stoned, I thought to myself, oh my God, I just feel so much better. And it wasn't until years later that I thought, better than what? Like I didn't even know I was upset. You know what I mean? Like when you're a kid, you haven't developed enough yet and you don't really know. So I was not one of those people who had a life and then lost it. I was a person who drug addiction took over before I ever got a life. So I lasted at school till I was 13 years old. And I had my first overdose in the schoolyard at 14. I'd gone back to violently assault a teacher. And I don't remember any of this. It's just stories I've been told. It's a mosaic of other people's stories. But I do remember waking up in the intensive care unit at 14, and I was in a, I was in one of those locked Perspex rooms. And I said to the nurse, "What am I doing in here?" And she said, "Well, if you want to hit people, this is where you go." And I just didn't even have a clue. But that was the consequences of the way I took drugs. I had no interest. I had lost all interest at a very early age in anything social. When I was young, I had a bit of sporting prowess and things like that. But by the time I'd started smoking a bit of weed as a 12-year-old, I lost all interest. Everything dropped away. All my friends dropped away. And in the end, my family dropped away and I wasn't welcome at the family home. Not that that really mattered. It wasn't a very safe place to be anyway. And I found myself completely alone in the world. And the only thing that gave me any respite or any comfort or any warmth was the drug. And I spent my adolescence and my early adulthood just, as that reading said, moving around the world like a the animal level, just hunting the streets like a hungry person, just looking for money. And in the end, I'd just been arrested so many times, I got put in prison. And when I got to prison, I was 50 kilos. Oh, that's not American. What is that? Like a 90 to 100 pounds or something. I was very, very light. And I was covered in sores and I hadn't eaten properly for years. I had, like, intellectually I knew I needed to eat food, but drugs had become such a priority in my life that I used to eat one Mars bar and one can of Coke a day so that I'd had some food, and some days I wouldn't even have that. And when I first got arrested, when I was going to go to prison, I was very, very sick from withdrawals, and they put me in this isolation cell. And in the end, my groaning and carrying on and crying and all that became so intense that they came and took me to the doctor. And the doctor told them that I was malnourished, but that I had a packed bowel and whatever the hell that means. But I tell you, the only thing it could have been packed with is Mars bars, because that's all I'd been eating for the last few years. And I ended up being sent to that prison, and I was not prepared. Like, when I was young, I thought I was a tough guy or whatever, I guess because I was all shut down emotionally, but and I had experienced a lot of violence in my using. But when I got to prison, I was so terrified, because as a kid, I was such a naughty little shit that I had run away from the cops a few times, and on my record, I had a escape from custody charge. So when I went to prison, they put me in the worst maximum security wing in New South Wales, which is the state where I was. And I got put in there with all the lifers and the serial killers, and it was just so heavy. I can't even describe it for me. And I was just that skinny little kid, and I was not ready for it. And I managed to survive 2 years in there. I was survive, if you call it survive. I survived, but I didn't thrive. And, a few terrible things happened while I was in that place. And, I got beaten senseless, and I had all my teeth broken, and I got hepatitis, and I got locked in all sorts of isolation places. And, and in the end, I did everything I could to use drugs every single day of my prison sentence. And when I got released from prison, the evidence of step one was clear in my life immediately, because I had made the decision to stop using when I was in there, going, when I get out, I must stop, or I'm going to end up back in this place. And the day I got out, I used until blackout. And then the next day I used until blackout, and it was so obvious to me that I was not in control of my own life anymore. and there didn't seem to be anything I could do about that. And very luckily for me, I had a highly interventionist parole officer who was very 12-step based, and she made me go to meetings, and she used to drop me there herself. She would actually take me and drop me at the front door of the meetings and then come and pick me up. And she used to say to me years later, I always knew you had the potential, but I knew you didn't have the ability to behave yourself. So very luckily for me, I believe people like that were the intervention in my life, you know what I mean? When people say God intervened in their life or whatever, that's how it worked for me. For me, God worked through people, and I was able to start coming along to the meetings and get clean. And at first I was just doing it because I was told, and I really didn't like it that much. But then one night I went to a meeting and I heard some people tell their stories, and I really related so much, and I got my first real flicker of hope. I got this sort of little, just baby little flicker of hope inside me that maybe I could be like these people and not use anymore and have a normal life. I'd been so used to not being part of anything normal or social or regular that I really had believed that once a junkie, always a junkie, and that was it for me. And then at some point, like the footprints in the sand, I looked back and I couldn't work out how I'd gotten where I was, because I was 2 or 3 years clean and I'd gone back to school and then I'd gone to university and I had a job and I had a girlfriend, and I was just like, how the hell did this all happen? How did this happen? And if I look back and I'm really honest, all that happened was I came to NA meetings and I prayed to my God, and other people carried me when I was no good. And I don't know, I got clean. Anyway, I'm clean. And I got clean and I've stayed clean now in a couple of weeks. God willing, I'll be 32 years clean. And life has not always been smooth, but there's no thing that has happened in my life that a drug would have made better. And when I first got clean, I stayed that same emotionally shut down kid. I just came to the meetings and I was so happy to have a new pair of shoes. And I was so happy to have my first ever time that I had a license for a car, or I was so happy that I had my first job, or I was so happy that I got into school, or like all the external things in my life were what was driving me. And when I would hear people talk from the heart, I still didn't feel it and I didn't know what they were talking about. And one time I said to my sponsor, checking that guy's just faking it, because he was crying. And my sponsor looked at me like I was insane and said, no, buddy, he's not faking it. And I realized in that moment that there was something different about me, you know, that I wasn't feeling like other people. And old timers used to try and make me hug people and, you know, watch sad movies and all this stuff. And in the end, my life followed its own process. And at the age of 35 years old, when I was about, I don't know, whatever that is, 12 years clean or something, my soul decided that it was ready to cope with the pain of my childhood. And I had a panic attack. Well, that's what they call it. But really, it was just 35 years of tears trying to come out through tiny tear ducts that were supposed to be used regularly but hadn't been. And, you know, I couldn't cope with feeling, and every feeling felt like I was going to die. And every time something happened, it like had a taproot to my childhood, and I started having all these memories. And then I relived all my childhood pain in a really thorough and therapeutic way. And NA held me and guided me. And the people around me taught me how to live, you know, just like the book says, and taught me how to feel. And I cried nearly every day for about 3 or 4 years. on and off, you know what I mean? And at first the tears were painful and hard, like I was crying out lumps of gnarly wood. But over time it got easier and easier, and I started crying out smooth Teflon tears that just slipped out easily, and I sort of embraced them and felt nice to be sad. And so in that reading, when I was just listening to Wade read out that reading, I noticed that I'd said there was a pain that I'd carried my whole life, and that pain started coming out slowly but surely and getting processed. And it was a great relief to be rejoining the human race and connecting with people through feeling and through vulnerability. And I learned to tell the real truth about what was going on for me and the real truth about how I felt. And I found that when I did that, people actually liked me and got closer to me. And I realized that I was now connecting with people's hearts. I could hear it when people cried. I could feel it when people were sad. And in the end, Narcotics Anonymous returned to me a fully functioning, emotional, healthy human being. And I'm so grateful for that, because life is not always kind, and it's best dealt with, in my experience as an adult, through talking and crying and feeling. And, like as I said, I got clean and everything just was saved. I just sailed the crest of a winning wave for years. Everything went right. I had firsts. I had new cars and new jobs, and I went to uni. And then at university, they asked me to come back and teach. I couldn't believe it because I was such an uneducated little shit. And then I was going, wow, I can pretty much do whatever I want. The world's my oyster, you know, like I can make my life any way I like. And then when I started feeling, all sorts of things happened. I had my first broken heart, which was just, oh, my God, it hurt so much. I loved that girl so much, and I lost her, and I just can't even believe how much it hurt me. I, like, laid on the beach in Byron Bay for about a year straight, just in agony. And then, as we all know, sadly, our recovery lives are punctuated by unexpected death, and quite a few friends have died along the way. Some of them very close ones. It's just part of the deal, I suppose. People were dying all the time when I was using as well. And at least now we've got a shot at stuff, you know, there's this amazing things have happened in my recovery, really. I've been over here that we've got this ad for Tats Lotto, and it says for a lottery, and it says you have to be in it to win it. And I feel like a lot of things have happened in my life that would not have happened if I hadn't have been having a go. And one of them is being picked for the basic text. Like, you know, plenty of people that I was peers with were talking about submitting a story, but I think I was the only one who actually submitted one in my area, maybe one other person. You got to be in it to win it. Then what happened was that exact Tats Lotto, when I was 4 years clean, you remember how I said the only things that were happening were successful external things? I was in this job and I didn't really like it. And I won the lottery. I won the lottery when I was 4 years clean, and I got all six numbers. And normally you would become like a multimillionaire or whatever, but it was just by chance the most winners ever on one night in any lottery in the world. And instead of winning millions of dollars, I won $25,000. And I decided to just go and blow it with my girlfriend on a trip to the States. We thought, let's just go to America and just go traveling. And at the time, perhaps I'd become the most distant I'd ever been from NA. Not that I was really that distant, but I had, you know, drifted a little bit. And I ended up in New York and DC around the exact time of the Baltimore Convention. And in that moment, when I found out the convention was on, I knew 100% that that's why I was there. And I caught a bus down to the Baltimore World Convention. And it was one of the most pinnacle moments of my life. I met people and I heard amazing shares, and my commitment to NA was renewed. And in that moment, I knew that lottery win wasn't for me. I knew it was for us. I knew it was for NA and for, you know, becoming reconnected. But that reminds me of another little story. Because when I was young, I was so hopeless. I got stung by a bee when I was a kid, and I realized that I was allergic. I had a very severe reaction. And the doctor told me that with these anaphylactic situations, they get worse each time. And the next time I got stung, I was hospitalized within minutes and almost died. And then they gave me all this medication to carry around with me, and some before EpiPens, like they gave me a syringe full of adrenaline. And because I was such a nutcase kid, the first thing I did was inject it to see what it was like. And then after that, I just forgot about it. I showed no interest in bee stings or allergies. But then when I was 7 years clean, I was at a golf course with someone, and I got stung by a bee, and I said, hey, I think I'm allergic to bees. Like, I was a grown-up now and I hadn't been stung for so long, and I'd sort of forgotten about it. And they said, oh, well, we better go to the doctor. And there just happened to be a doctor around the corner. So we went there, and as I went into the doctor's, I collapsed. I had a full anaphylactic shock. And whatever happens, your blood pressure drops or increases or whatever, and I passed out. And the doctor saved me and all that. But between being saved and that, I went to wherever you go. Like, I had a near-death experience, and I sort of crossed over a bit. And I went to this really dark space where I felt completely quiet and peaceful. And I thought to myself, I think I'm dying. I think I've died. And in that moment, I thought, well, I've had 7 good years. And I realized that the freedom that NA gives us, it's real. It's like enlightenment. Because the pain that I had lived for the whole previous time to getting clean compared to the 7 years that I had been clean was so markedly different. Even that would have been enough. Just to have known freedom would have been enough. But anyway, he saved my life, that doctor. And I went on to be a long-term recovering person. And one of the other things I noticed in that reading was that I'd said, I own a home and a business and all that. Well, let me tell you, I've lost all that. During the global financial crisis, I had a severe financial calamity and I lost everything. And on the day that my accountant rang me to tell me I had nothing left, my son was born. So I had a brand new baby boy. I had no money and nowhere to live. I was so stressed. It really tested my fear of financial security to the limit. And but the truth is that no matter what life has thrown at me, if I can stay clean, I've managed to survive it. And now my son is nearly 11 years old, 10 or 11, 10 and a half years. And he is the great love of my life. I always thought the great love of my life was going to be a girl, but it turned out to be my own son. And the great gift in my life has been Narcotics Anonymous. But I'm just going to tell you one more story. And that is that when I was first in recovery, I trusted nobody. I told nobody anything because that's what I'd learned as a young criminal. And the one person who inspired me was this guy who ended up becoming my sponsor. And because I'd grown up with no love in my family and I had attached myself to my big brothers who were drug dealers, this guy seemed like a really, really, I don't know, it just seemed normal for me to attach to him and trust him. And he was a big guy in NA and he had more time up than other people. And I really loved him. He was charismatic and good looking and girls loved him and all that. And over the years, we went to world conventions together and lived our lives together and had children together. And, you know, we were like best friends for 28 years. And then I found out that he was sleeping with my partner, and it it rocked my world. It really, really knocked me around because he was my main connection to NA. And at first I didn't really know what to do because I didn't want to besmirch the NA name. I didn't want to tell anyone what had happened. I didn't want to share about it. I just thought, geez, wow, like I don't know how to do, like we owned a business together as well. All our families were connected. Our friends were connected. It was just a fucking disaster for me. It was like someone had dropped a nuclear bomb in my life. So I'm, you know, 28 years clean and I just don't know what to do. I'm so completely confused. Every fiber of my body wants revenge and violence. And every lesson I've learned, everything the program's ever taught me was that we have to find a better way. And thank God for all you people on this screen who taught me along the way to stop and take a breath. And don't make any decisions while you're upset and things like that, because they saved my ass. And it's 4 years later now and I still haven't made a decision. I'm still calming down. But what I didn't do was I didn't call any names. I didn't attack anyone. I didn't swear. I went to a therapist. And I asked them about forgiveness. And I said, in the end, am I just going to have to get over this and forgive these people? And she said to me, I'm sick of all you NA and AA people, bloody thinking that you're Gandhi and Nelson Mandela. She goes, I'll tell you, it's not about forgiveness. She goes, it's about coming to peace with the past and about drawing a strong boundary around people who are no good for you or are unsafe. And I'd spent my whole life from that moment being the little kid who copped all that violence to being the adolescent who copped all the violence to letting thugs and addicts and all these people run riot through my life, not that I wasn't one of them, but in NA, my life had been an open book. I'm just like, I let anyone in, you know what I mean? I just thought NA was just gold and honesty's gold and you can know anything about me and I'll tell you anything. I'll tell you the deepest, darkest truths of my soul, anything. And that process taught me that I should have a better vetting process in my life and that I was a grown up now and I should probably decide how I wanted to live. I think I've had the longest childhood of anyone in the world, but I think that having my son and going through that specific experience, it's taught me to grow up a bit. And it also taught me generally about my own reactivity, you know, about how I react to things generally. And the other thing I heard in that story today that I haven't thought about for a while is when I wrote in that story that when I get treated as second best or when I get rejected or when something like that betrayal happens to me, that I get this extreme pain. And of course I got that, like I was in the fetal position for about 2 months on the bed, not being able to sleep. But what it didn't do that it usually would do is cause that feeling of worthlessness. Normally I would say to myself, this is because I'm no good. This is because I'm useless. This is because I'm ugly. This is because I'm fat. This is whatever, you know, and none of that happened. And the exact opposite happened. So that 28 years clean, I realized it was about them, not me. And because of that, I realized all of that must be false. I can't be that. I can't be worthless because nobody is. I saw my own son one time asleep on the bed and I knew that he was divine. I could feel it. I could see it. I saw him sleeping and I went, my son is divine. And I thought to myself, I wonder when that stops. And I thought, it doesn't stop. We're all divine. It's just that we lose connection with it as we get older and we become adults. And we get jaded by life and all that. But I started trying to reconnect to that and see the beauty in all you people. I went back to the meetings and I became way less judgmental of myself. And since then, I've I don't know. It's like I've been given this other deeper sort of peace. And I guess that's what everyone always promised in recovery. They promised that the layers would get deeper and they'd get peeled away and you know, gifts come wrapped in shit and all those things that people say. And that's been my exact experience. But in the end, I got built. I probably should have been a sociopath. I was taught to shut down emotionally, and I was taught not to care about others and to have no empathy and all that. But Narcotics Anonymous gave me the exact opposite of that. And I can't remember why I was saying that, but in the end, I love my life in Narcotics Anonymous. A lot of the external things in my life that looked like they were going to be so good have escaped me. And in the end, I've decided that the things that, that's what I was going to say. The thing I really do care about in my life, that it took me till I was about 10 years clean to really feel like I cared about anything at all. And it was, I had this sponsee and he used again, and I got very upset. And then I went, oh, wow, I'm actually upset. Like I'm having a feeling because someone used. And then I realized that I cared. And so I decided that it didn't matter about the external shit, whether I had a lot of money or whether I had a nice business or a career or anything like that. What I really cared about was people getting clean. And I would do, for the people that I know and that I, well, even for anyone on this screen, if I knew you were suffering and I could help, I'd do anything for an NA member. I really would, because I believe in it so completely. And also I really have come to the belief that it's the simple things in life that are most important, because I have to be okay. I have to have a deep sense of autonomous security, whether I am rich or whether I'm not, whether I'm fat and ugly or whether I'm hot or good looking or whether I've got friends or don't. I need to be okay. And one of the things that really turns me on is just getting together with some NA people and having a dinner and caring about each other and getting to know each other. And the thing that I was missing in my childhood was warmth. There was no warmth from my parents. There was no warmth from my family. And Narcotics Anonymous has given me that back. It's filled my life with warmth. And in the end, that's what I want. Thanks.
Thank you. Good. Thank you. Thank you.